SBS στα ελληνικά.
Mrs. Donna Stoltenberg. Many people remember the homeless during the homeless week, but you seem to care for them every day of the year. When did you become emotionally involved with the homeless and decided to do something to help?
Well, I think that it actually stemmed from childhood. I had an uncle who had autism, and I was always worried about him and always concerned that he would become homeless. So it was something that I was aware of from quite a young age. But I first started actually supporting and helping people about 4 years ago when I was in Sydney for a conference for work, and I was just out for a jog, and I saw a fellow fast asleep on a park bench, and it was freezing cold, and I just wanted to help him, but I didn't live in Sydney, I didn't have a blanket, I didn't have anything to give him, so I just kind of left him there and came back to Melbourne, and you know, I couldn't stop thinking about him, so I started up a blanket drive that quickly went quite viral, and that led to what is now known as the National Homeless Collective Charity, just from that one fellow that I saw. Yeah.
Well, everybody can get inspired from one person, even if that person is in serious need. And that's that appears to have happened to you. So your first project was to collect blankets and hand them out to the homeless in the streets of Melbourne. But then you came up with another idea, let's say, which was the Melbourne Period Project. Can you talk to us and explain what the Melbourne Period is, a project is, and what kind of needs you have to cover?
Yeah, sure. So while I was out delivering blankets and sleeping bags one night on the street, I approached a lady and asked her if she needed any blankets or sleeping bags. She did, but she also asked me if I had any sanitary items, in particular any tampons, because she had a period and she didn't have anything to use and she didn't have any money to buy anything. And I was really quite struck and quite horrified at what I'd seen and heard. And I thought, you know, wow, you know, I'm a female, I have periods, I've got sisters who do, like, we all know about it, but what are these women doing on the street if they've got their period and nothing to use for it? So on the back of all the support I had received with the blanket initiative that I'd started, I went back and asked people there if they, you know, if they would support this as well, because I thought, you know, there's so many women out there experiencing homelessness, and majority of them are having periods, so, you know, someone needs to do something. And I'd looked around and I'd seen that there wasn't any programs available. No one was doing anything to support them. So I started the Melbourne Period Project. We first of all spoke to a doctor and a GP and a gynecologist to see what we should or shouldn't do. And then we decided to make different packs because but we still believe that people should have choice in the products they use, just like people who are housed or people who have money have a choice in what they prefer to use. Plus, there was also cultural sensitivities that we needed to take into account about what women of different cultures use to manage their period. And we sort of looked in, you know, I could see firsthand, you know, this lady on the street, what happens when you don't have your period? And you're just forced to steal, or you're forced to choose between the mega bit of money you've got. Do you spend it on food? Do you spend it on sanitary items? Do you spend it on toiletries? You're forced to steal the product or the money for the product. And we're putting people into really difficult situations purely because of a biological function that they don't have any control over. And without the adequate items, people are having to use items that were just not designed for menstrual management, like clothing or socks or sometimes even, you know, leaves, like from trees or you know, or stealing products, and or, you know, people trying to reuse products that are not designed to be reusable. So people trying to wash out used menstrual pads or tampons and reuse them again, which is absolutely horrific. And not only is it degrading, embarrassing, it's humiliating, and it also increases the risk of infection that from using products that are just not designed for menstrual management. So I thought, you know, there's so many people out there who can help with this. Let's start something up and make sure that these women get support. So
the problem was there. What kind of help did you come up with?
So what we decided to do was to create period packs. So they're packs designed for menstrual management without a bathroom, because the majority of the people that we were supporting didn't have a bathroom to actually have a shower in or wash their hands in or anything like that. So we decided to make up the period packs that would have a choice in them of pads or tampons, super or regular, plus they also have things like disposable bags, so the used product can be disposed of safely that doesn't put the public at risk. Wipes for, you know, if there's no running water or no toilet paper, there are the towelette wipes we put in. Liners as well for people who aren't sure when their period's going to arrive or can't change their underwear regularly. Mm-hmm. Even hand sanitizer if there's no soap available. We were putting a little chocolate in there for a while too, a little Fritto Frog go in, but we actually had to stop that because, we thought, you know, when you get your period, most people want chocolate. Not everyone, but most people do.
Yes, but you do have that cravings. Women know that.
But we had to stop that because we weren't sure the shelf life. So when the pack sort of left our hands, we didn't want to be giving, you know, sometimes it was summertime, you know, and you're sort of eating chocolate soup if, the frog has melted. So, and then it will, you know, cool again and go white and horrible. So we stopped putting the chocolate frog in, but we put everything in there for people to be able to manage menstruation without a bathroom and to be able to dispose of the entire pack safely. It comes in a biodegradable bag, and we use stamps, not stickers. So, the whole pack was sort of able to be disposed of adequately. And it just means that not only did it support people with menstrual management when they had their period, but it stopped the anxiety about the period arriving. You know, there's weeks of, oh my goodness, what will I do when my period arrives? I've got nothing for it. So it was helping people just, you know, they just know, oh, you know, there's so many places around Melbourne I can get these period packs from now every day of the year, and they don't have to worry about the cost, the affordability, about the availability of the products. We've just got them everywhere. So it alleviated a lot of stress for people.
Where do these products come from? Are they donated, and how do you distribute them?
So the products come from public donations mainly. So we've got about 180 drop-off points around Melbourne where anyone in the public, if you go to the Melbourne Period Project Facebook page or the Period Project website, you can ask who your local drop-off point is. So the majority of them are just people's houses. So we don't advertise where they are. We don't put those online. But if you contact us, we just pass the number on to the person who lives closest to you, and you can make contact with them. And once you know who that is, you can donate every month or how often you want to. We do have people who make financial donations. There are, of course, costs in getting these packs made up. So we have a warehouse we pay rent on it. We have electricity bills, just like everyone else does. So people can either donate financially or, if you know, there's the tampon tax as well. There's the GST on tampons, which we find absolutely appalling. But as a registered charity, we don't pay GST on anything because we're GST exempt. So if you want to bypass the GST on tampons, it's simple. Donate the $5 to us. We'll buy the tampons and we don't pay GST on it. So easiest way to stop the GST applying to women experiencing homelessness, because we don't pay GST on tampons. We can claim it back when we do our best, so, and quite legally as well. So,
let's hope the law will change, and this will come larger available without GST for all women.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's an archaic tax. It should not be on there. Tampons are not a luxury. They're for menstrual management, which is a biological process. So people can donate products. They can donate financially. We welcome both. We now work with a wonderful company called Giftbox Organic. So if you decide to buy tampons from them, rather than shopping at the stores and supporting the big companies, if you buy tampons from Giftbox Organic, you can get a subscription and have the tampons delivered to your door. And we actually employ women off the street to come into the warehouse and pack these tampons. And we give them work. We give them them, we pay them award wages, we give them jobs, we give them the income security that they need to get off the street. So Giftbox Organic directly and the Melbourne Period Project together, we directly employ women off the street and help them back into housing and back into employment. So every box of Giftbox Organic tampons that are bought from a customer, a free box is given to someone experiencing homelessness. So it's like a triple win situation. Mm-hmm. So
it's very important because it's not just charity, let's say, by donating to these women the products they need during their period, but you also help them to gain back their dignity by working, collaborating, and giving back.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we provide employment. We provide employment pathways to people. So we help them with their, as soon as we've connected with them, we help them with their resume. We help them with job search. We actually provide employment to them, but also provide avenues to get employment in other areas. There's that emotional support. There's that, you know, that physical support, you know, with the tangible items like tampons and pads, but there's also that emotional support and that friendship and that positive connection that we give them. So they're not so isolated. It's really about connecting with people on a positive, you know, via a positive avenue to actually help them empower themselves to get out of the situation that they're in. So we don't do it for them, we do it with them, but we provide the pathways for people to, you know, for instance, with employment, the rule is that if you don't show up, you don't get paid, but you also don't get fired. So we actually work around that person's individual employment needs. So if they can't show up to work till 10 o'clock because they've got other appointments, not a problem. If they can't show up till midnight, not a problem. They'll be paid for when they get there. So there's the incentive mm-hmm. to work, but there's also the fact that, you know, if someone can't come in 3 weeks in a row because they happen to have other appointments that they need to deal with, and look, if you're experiencing homelessness, your life is one appointment after another. It really is. And but we work around those barriers to make sure that the employment is on an individual basis on the person's need at the time. So mm-hmm. this means that we do connect with people, you know, on far beyond the tangible item, which is, you know, the sanitary, which is, you know, the pad or the tampon. So
how do they get them? How do you distribute them? How do they find out about you?
Okay, so we have about 55 agencies around Victoria, around Melbourne alone actually, who distribute the period packs for us. So crisis accommodation centres, we distribute the packs through them, through the shower vans and the laundry vans and women's health services, services for refugees. There are many different organisations that actually stock our packs. So the organisations send us an email and they'll say, look, you know, we need 10 packs, 20 packs, 200 packs. They let us know which ones they want. We make them up. We have a team of amazing volunteers around Melbourne who come in and help us make the packs. And then we've got a lovely volunteer driver named Lorraine who picks up all of these packs and she delivers them out to all the agencies. And then when people connect with the agencies, they are offered the period packs then so that they've got something. And then people kind of get to know where they are. And the other thing that we do as well is we regularly walk around the streets and find the women who are on the street, sleeping in the park, sleeping under the bridges, and let them know about the packs. But we also let them know about housing services and support services that are out there that they might be able to tap into as well. And we're on Info Exchange, which has an app called Ask Easy, where people experiencing homelessness can ask about, you know, where to find whatever services or products they're looking for. So, yeah, so we're really out there. They're quite sort of, you know, we sort of say we've spread it all over Melbourne.
Now, you seem... it seems that that project needs a lot of effort and joint work. What are your other plans? Because we're pretty sure that you have seen other needs out there on the streets that you might want to cover.
Yes, yes. Look, there. You know, if we could do everything, we would. We're kind of limited by, you know, time and money, really. But we now have a new project that we've started up. Well, actually, two new projects. So we've got the school project, which supports the children of the people experiencing homelessness. You'd be horrified to know how many children are out there accessing homelessness services. But we make sure the children have everything they need for school. And, you know, that can be everything from the school bag and lunchbox and drink bottle right down to swimming gear for swimming lessons or camping gear for school camps, so these children can still be included and still attend these extracurricular activities that the other children are doing. So we provide the bathers, the towel, the goggles, the sleeping bag for camp, the jacket, the boots, everything kids need. So the other thing we do is the Plate Up project, which is new, but it's very exciting. We're planning the second project of that. We'll be starting off in September. And that's supporting people currently living in crisis accommodation to get back into employment, using food and nutrition and cooking as the vessel for that, although they might not end up in hospitality employment, but it's about reconnecting to work, reconnecting to your own interests and finding that commonality in the friendships with other people who are in the same situation as you, and providing that avenue for you to actually get back into work. So we run that out of Launch Housing in Hague Street. And we use the commercial kitchen there, and we do cooking. We do, people get their food safety certificate, their responsible service of alcohol certificate, their barista course, and then we help filter them sort of into employment places like Kinfolk Cafe, Lentil as anything, and then on to the Left Bank Hotel if they're ready to do, say, a hospitality apprenticeship, like an apprentice chef or something like that. So the Plate Up project is very exciting. We have a really good outcome with this project, with people who would normally be still stuck in that homelessness and unemployment cycle actually getting work and breaking free from the cycle of poverty that homelessness often exacerbates. So Plate Up is something that we're working on, and we've got the Sleeping Bags project still runs as well, the original one that we started. We've extended now through to Brisbane, Sydney, Canberra. We work with Essentials for Women in Adelaide. So we've become Australia-wide in quite a short time as well. So we've got lots of other exciting things that we're doing, lots of collaborations, and really supporting people across the board with much more than the tangible items are hugely important, they really are, but it's more about that connection point and actually becoming an organisation that people can connect to when they're ready to sort of move forward with their life and not just come to us for a handout, but also, you know, hand up to keep moving forward as well.
From your experience being close to people that experience homelessness, what would your message be towards the rest that really have no clue what homelessness is, or sometimes even fear the homeless?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, with homelessness, there's a lot of myths around it, and a lot of that comes from what we see in the media. We kind of see, you know, we think of homelessness as just being, you know, old men on the street, but the people on the street are really only representing 6% of the total people who are actually experiencing homelessness. What we encourage people to do is really try and think about things not from your own point of view. We have so many people who'll go up to someone on the street, they'll buy them a coffee and go, here go, I bought you a coffee, or here go, I bought you a burger, I bought you some food. But they've never thought to ask the person what they need, and it's crucial to do that, because you'd be amazed at the amount of people who are actually walking up to people on the street and just handing them food. And there's only so much food you could eat in a day, there's only so much food you can carry. People also do experience dietary restrictions, just like everybody else. So, you know, people who are vegetarian should be able to choose to stay vegetarian. It's really important to walk up to a person and just introduce yourself, you know, hi, I'm Donna. You know, do you have a minute for a chat? Is there anything I can get for you right now? Would you like a coffee? Would you like something to eat? Or, you know, would you like a pair of socks or a beanie or, you know, whatever? So whatever you can afford to give, but offer that person the choice of what it is that they actually need at that point in time. You know, someone might have had their 10th coffee already that morning, but all they want is a bottle of water or a can of Coke. Or, you know, someone might have had so many burgers offered to them, but all they'd really like is, you know, is a coffee. There's other things to remember as well, like if you're on the street and, you know, that's where you're sleeping, you've got very limited availability to be able to use a bathroom. And the more coffee you drink, the more you're going to need that bathroom. So someone might really want a coffee, but they need the bathroom, and all their stuff's going to get taken if they leave. So it's really important to look at things from that person's point of view and just ask them first and not assume. We make too many assumptions about what somebody actually might need, and we think, oh, homeless must mean hungry, but it's not the case. The person might, you know, might have already eaten, but there might be something else that they need. And if you're not in a position to give money, that's totally okay. Don't fear talking to someone because you can't give them money. So if you ask somebody what they need and they say, have you got any money, it's perfectly okay to say, look, I actually don't at the moment, but, you know, I'd really like to sit and chat with you for 5 minutes, or, you know, maybe I could just take you out for lunch, or, you know, I could, you know, get you that coffee or a pair of socks, or are you going to be here tomorrow? I could probably find a sleeping bag for you, or, you know, there are many other ways that you can help people. But
so you suggest first to help and to approach homeless people, not to be afraid of them.
Exactly.
Not to just walk past them, but really sit down, give some time and ask them what their needs are.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You know, make an effort to spend even one lunch day a week talking to the same person, because when you're on the street, one of the hardest things is that you're always approached by strangers. It's very rarely the same person. And we in the community, we have our friends that we love catching up with, people that we know, people that we love, people that we understand and that understand us. And it's really important for people on the street to have those same connections. So if you see somebody, you know, it's okay to just approach the one person, you know, once a week, just say, hey, look, I'd love to have lunch with you on Fridays. Can we catch up? You know, are you going to be here? And spend, you know, your lunch hour or even half your lunch hour just sitting with that same person once a week and really get to know them and get to know their story and help them. You know, that friendship and connection is very often more important than money that you can hand over. If you want to hand someone money on the street, that's fine too. You've just got to remember that once you've handed it over, it's none of your business what they do with it. So you can't put restrictions on it. You know, if you're going to give, so I've had people say, look, you know, I want to give someone $5, but I don't want them to spend it on alcohol. And I think, well, I spend my money on alcohol sometimes, like a bottle of wine here and there, so why can't they? You know, you don't give people money with restrictions. If you, you know, if your nephew turns 21 and you put, you know, $50 in a birthday card for him, you don't say to him, well, okay, but I'm going to tell you what you can spend it on. You know, if he was going to spend it on a nice bottle of scotch or something, you'd say, great, hope you enjoy yourself, or, you know, go to a nightclub, have a couple of drinks on me. But we put these restrictions on people on the street because we think that we, you know, we have some say in what they spend their money on. And if you can't give without restriction, then don't give money, because once you've handed it over, it's not yours anymore. It's like taxes. We pay our taxes, we don't get a say in where they go. But, you know, I think it's really important to remember that one of the things that people experiencing homelessness lose is choice. They don't get to choose what they want anymore. They don't get to choose their food or where they sleep or how their life sort of turns out. So it's important as all human beings to actually have that autonomy and that choice in what you do. And we can facilitate that by a conversation in asking people first, you know, would you like a chat? Would you like, is there something I can get for you? And maybe making some suggestions, because it's really often when I ask people on the street, you know, is there anything I can get for you? They're kind of a bit taken aback because they very rarely are. So you kind of catch people off the guard. They're like, no one sort of asked me that. I don't know. So I offer some suggestions like, well, you know, do you want a coffee? Do you want something to eat? Do you want... And sometimes people look at me and they'll go, oh, you know what I'd really love? So these are some actual examples. I would love a strawberry thick shake, you know. Everyone gives me coffee. It's hot. I want a strawberry thick shake. So that was in summertime. Another lady, she said, I'd really love a really, like a hot ham and cheese croissant. No one ever buys me one of those, and I'd love a hot ham and cheese croissant. So, and then being able to choose what they want and actually have that given to them rather than what you want. So I love coffee. I drink coffee all the time, but I can't assume everyone else loves coffee or that they like their coffee hot. Or there's also religious restrictions as well. So, you know, you might approach someone experiencing homelessness who can't eat meat for religious reasons, or can't eat, you know, pork or something for religious reasons. So it's really important to also afford them that respect, to practice that religious component of their diet by asking them what it is they'd like to eat. So if they do say they're hungry, ask them if there's anything they can't have. You know, do you have any allergies or things that you don't like, or is there anything in particular that you do like that you could, you know, suggest to me? So asking people, it's respectful and it's ensuring that they'll have something that they do like. And if they say no, if they say, look, I really don't want any food, then just respect that as well and just say, look, you know, well, would you like a chat? Or, you know, kind of, I might be coming back tomorrow. Is there anything, you know, I could probably bring you then? Don't force it, but, you know, give people that. You know, if you think about it, if someone comes to your house, unless you know them super, super well, you ask
them,
people.
Yes.
If someone comes to your house, you say, would you like a coffee? Would you like a tea or a coffee? Are you hungry? You don't just make something and hand it to people unless you know what they want. But we tend to not afford the people on the street that same respect, and we really should. So the saying, beggars can't be choosers, should not be a factor in this, because one, don't look at people as beggars. And, you know, even if you do, why can't they choose? Why can't they have a choice in what they want to eat that day or drink that day, or, you know, what they want on their feet, you know, socks or shoes or whatever. We need to get rid of that mentality of beggars can't be choosers and let people actually have choice. And giving people choice, actually, usually, it usually gives them that sort of impetus to, you know, keep going and go, okay, great, I've got a choice here in what I want to do. And we all want choice in our life. We all want choice about what we, you know, eat, drink, or what we do that day.
Mrs. Donna Stoltenberg, thank you very much for speaking to SBS Radio about this sensitive and very enlightening issue, homelessness.
You are most welcome. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Πείτε μας τη γνώμη σας. Κάντε like στην σελίδα μας στο Facebook ή ακολουθήστε μας στο Twitter στο SBS Greek.